I have sensed some animosity in the house. Escape the horror of your family get-together and listen to the Uncut Gems podcast, a weekly show where we talk about movies that nobody else wants to talk about, usually for as long as it takes to watch them, or more. This is episode number 151, and my name is Jakob.
And my name is Randy.
Hello, we're getting close to Christmas, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah. So, you know, tonight, I don't know when you're listening to this, but, you know, today we're talking about Krampus. Among other things, we will try to get to the bottom of how to actually pronounce this word.
Will we? That's good.
Because I don't quite know. Krampus.
Michael Dougherty, the filmmaker, he calls it Krampus.
Krampus.
Maybe could with it less be Canadian one of those? Twang. Then, you know,
the letter A is what they call a schwa, which is a very sort of accent specific Krampus. You know, like the in money. Depends on what it is. Depends on the region. Will be money.
Right.
I don't know. So anyway, we're talking about Krampus.
Krampus.
Krampus. Anyway, so we're talking about Krampus today because we are slowly going through our December sort of little jaunt through Christmas-themed horror films. So last week we talked about Silent Night, Deadly Night. What's happening next week, you're going to find out in, I don't know, a little bit. And by the way, might as well just quickly tell what's on the Patreon. So on the Patreon, as a tie-in to this sort of expedition, we are talking about Black Christmas. So head over there, patreon.com/uncutgemspod is where you want to go to do that. And just $3, $4.15 Canadian, £3, €3. I don't know. You do your conversions. Like, this is how much it takes to open up access to everything we have. We don't have tiers, just one tier. Support and you get stuff. Easy peasy. And in addition to this, you will also get access to this month's Soderbergh's episode, which is No Sudden Move.
Yep.
And then later down the line, towards the end of the month, we will be finishing our John Cassavetes marathon with Big Trouble. And of course, everything else once you've subscribed, everything else we have in there is going to be available for you to listen. So full on. Complete David Lynch marathon, bunch of mini retrospectives, a whole loads more tie-ins, all sorts of stuff. We have podcasts galore, okay? So if you enjoy our voices and you'd like to help out, that's how you can do it. If you don't want to help out that way, you can always leave us a donation. Ko-fi.com/uncutgemspod is where you want to go and leave us a one-off donation, buy us a coffee there. And if you don't feel like spending money, get it. It's fine. You can always leave us a star rating or a review wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you don't like to do that anyway, but you still like to help, just tell someone. Tell a friend. Tell your mom. Don't tell your mom. Because I'm told that I'm a potty mouth. And apparently, you know, I don't know.
Tell your mom about the straight story episode.
Yeah.
We're very well behaved on that.
Don't tell your mom about the Lost Highway episode. Because I distinctly remember comparing Bill Pullman's sax solo to his casual sessions of autoerotic asphyxiation or something. I don't know. Whatever rolls your boat. So
maybe don't tell your mom about this episode then either.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, don't tell your mom. Tell your dad. Dad's gonna love this. Because we are just two dads talking smack about movies. How about that? So, let's just get on with this, right? Shall we? So, So, how about we talk about the 2015 film titled Krampus?
We have to keep looking. We have to pair up and take turns.
Okay? Yes. Can't go back out there. You see this? It's damn near frostbite in under 4 minutes.
Honey, keep your voice down.
Besides of being sub-zero out there, someone's tearing through your fancy-ass neighborhood, honey, picking everybody off. It's the truth.
Honey, listen, why don't we just leave, right? We can all pile in the truck and we'll just see as far as we can get in. And
the truck's gone.
Beth?
Torn to pieces.
What?
Yeah, and even if she wasn't, the streets are totally screwed. We can't go anywhere. It's too dangerous. You got it?
Howard, how much ammo do you have?
A couple shells still loaded, maybe a dozen in my pocket. Why?
I think our best bet is to stay put. Board up all the doors and windows. And as soon as the weather breaks, we'll go find her.
I told you we should have gone to my brother's.
Sure, Howard. Christmas on a pig farm.
Jesus was born in a barn.
Krampus was directed by Michael Dougherty. Dougherty?
I think Dougherty.
Let me just open. Sometimes they will tell you that this is how you pronounce it, but no, not this time. So Michael Dougherty? Dougherty? I don't know. It's written by Todd Casey, Dougherty as well, and Zach Shields. Stars Adam Scott, Toni Collette, David Kirchner? Kirchner.
Oh, I don't actually know.
Kirchner? I don't know. Kirchner. David Kirchner. Okay. Wow, I'm all over the shop today. Christ, this is Jacob just gave a shit together. So Alison Tolman as well, a bunch of other people, and Krampus Tales is a dark fantasy horror comedy with a Christmas theme that follows a dysfunctional Engel family as they gather for Christmas. And when young Max loses his holiday spirit due to family tension, he inadvertently summons the ancient demonic force known as Krampus. The malevolent creature and its army of twisted Christmas minions wreak havoc on the family and their suburban town. The Engel family must navigate a nightmarish Christmas Eve, facing the consequences of Max's wish and struggling to survive the supernatural onslaught. How about that? Right. I don't have too much to say about this movie in terms of like what's behind the scenes. Like, all I know is that sort of it has its origins in what the, I want to say, like Michael Dougherty would probably call like the early days of the Wild West of the internet when he received an e-card. Do you remember last time when he received an e-card?
I don't know if I ever have.
You know, there was this brief time when people really got hot on like sending people emails and then just like, this is the future, you know, someone will just figure out like, well, your more tech savvy uncle or cousin will decide like, I'm not sending Christmas cards this year. I'm going to send e-cards.
Right.
So you get an email with a card and say like, happy Christmas from the family of whoever, you know, and it'll be like a funny picture. Apparently Michael Dougherty got one with Krampus in it. And he was just like, well, that would be interesting, you know, to make a movie that's kind of like about the sort of the dark side of Christmas. Because he calls Krampus the shadow of Santa. I'm like, wow, what a very poetic way to call this person. So anyway, so that's kind of at the time when I think that was probably even before he directed his debut, which was Trick or Treat. Mm-hmm. That was 2000, I want to say 7.
Sounds right.
Something like that, yeah. So he wanted to do a scary Christmas movie and the sort of e-card kind of gave him the inspiration to just start just diddling about the sort of idea of maybe writing a treatment. So that's, I think that's one of the reasons why he's one of the co-writers, but I think Zach Shields is one of the main sort of forces behind the film, as behind the story. And then, you know, it took a while, I think, until 2011, where they fleshed it out, wrote an actual script that was with Zach Shields and Todd Casey, and then they tried to convince, I think they convinced Legendary Pictures to make the film, to bankroll the film, but then it took a while for, I think, the Universal Studio to get on board. This idea of like, let's do a Christmas horror film, because I think everyone in the world kind of knows the story of, like, we talked about it last week, like Silent Night, Deadly Night, mm-hmm. that the sort of Christmas themed horror films, they tend to kind of come with a little bit of a curse. It's just like there's a non-zero probability that some evangelical right-wing nut job's gonna lose their shit and they're gonna start picketing the movie Okay. You, because for some reason, Santa's, you know, a sacred cow. You don't know. So, yeah. So they convinced. Yeah. So they convinced Universal that it's a good idea that they would actually release the movie only after they agreed to do a to do it under a PG 13 rating. Right. So they got Alison Tolman. Yep. There it is. They got Adam Scott. They got David Koechner.
Koechner. I looked it up.
Is it Koechner or Koechner?
Koechner.
Koechner. Okay.
Yep.
Toni Collette as well. Colette. So they sort of wrapped principal photography in like 2 months between like March and May 2015. The creature effects, that's actually a cool thing because the creature effects or the special effects were done by Weta Workshop. And if you don't know who Weta Workshop are, that would be the sort of the little studio. And in 2015, it was a major studio that was kind of just behind sort of Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, District 9, that kind of stuff, right? So pretty big deal, right? So they kind of just, they offered their services in preparing the CGI effects. And the film was supposed to be released late November 2015, but they pushed it by a few weeks to, I think, December 4th, 2015. To more or less bring it close to December 5th in Germany is Krampusnacht, which is the night of the Krampus, because the 6th of December, and this is in Germanic, in Poland as well, by the way, like this, the 6th of December is when Santa comes, right? So, because it's his name day. I don't know, because like in Anglo-Saxon countries, name day doesn't exist. Like, you know, like a day in the year where that there will be under the patronage of a saint who's would have your name, right? So you get to get presents from your family because it's your name day. So you get birthday and your name day. It's fantastic.
Fun.
Yeah, like one extra day to have some kind of a, you know, something special, you know, like a dinner out or, I don't know, a few gifts, I don't know, something. Usually it's an excuse for like older generations to get together and get absolutely shit-faced. So, never stop them. Like all they needed is an excuse. It's just like, oh, it's my name.
Someone's name.
It's someone's name day today. So you know, like, and just like someone shows up on your doorstep with a bottle of vodka, and the next thing you know, it's like you're like it's tomorrow, and you're regretting everything you did last night. It's kind of what it is. That's kind of like a life of an average Polish uncle, you know. So anyway, Krampus was released on December 4th, 2015. And I think this was kind of to coincide, which kind of unfortunately coinciding with the release of Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2 and The Good Dinosaur. So between a massive franchise blockbuster and a Pixar film, counter-programmed to this,
yeah.
Right? It actually did pretty well, partly because The Good Dinosaur turned out to be a massive stinker, so it didn't really get any money.
It is sort of smart counter-programming.
If you think about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on. A little bit parched, I'm sorry. So yeah, didn't do half as bad because it cost like 15 mil to make, and it overall, I think it made more than 60. So it made its money back.
Mm-hmm.
And considering there was also being released against a J-Law starring franchise film based on a YA novel, like you can't really go wrong with that, right? Although I recently watched all of these films thinking I'll watch the new one, and I decided against watching the new one because they're all dog shit. I don't know how I watched the first one and I was just like, wow, this is bad. You know, let me watch the second one. Just, you know. And then you're just like, wow, it's even worse. But, you know, like, in for a penny. And you watch the third one. The third one is just a half the film anyway. I mean, the second one is kind of like ends up on a cliffhanger. And the third one ends up on a cliffhanger because it's divided in two. Because it starts...
It's the same book.
With the title. Yeah, exactly. With the title just starts with part one. And you're just like, wow. And they're all like 2.5 hours long. You're just thinking to yourself, like, wow, I've wasted 10 hours of my life watching J-Lo in a very tight-fitting outfit, which is, you know, like, she's nice to look at and whatnot, but Jesus.
And the great Donald Sutherland is in there, whose face is now on a Canadian stamp. So there's that.
Good for him.
Yeah, it's awesome, yeah.
Good for him. So anyway, Krampus was released on December 4th, 2015. So people kind of enjoyed what they saw, but critics not so much, so it's a bit mixed. We're going to get to it because, you know, like, oh, praise for its sort of the Joe Dante dark fantasy sort of things, but overall it's a mess. That's kind of what the consensus was. Which brings us to here and now. How about we talk about Krampus, and let's just start with the usual. Let's just exchange our general impressions. So Randy, kick us off. Tell me, what do you think about Krampus?
I really like Krampus. I'd never seen it before, and I watched it, and I had a blast with it, and I'm looking forward to watching this again over the holidays. This is one I can go back to. I had a phenomenal time with it, and as I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, you know what? This feels, it feels like it's borrowing from the Home Alone type of street, or the, you know, the type of family quirkiness that you might get with the Christmas Vacation. Like, it's borrowing from this, but it has a nice heart to it in a way, you know, like the Scrooge thing, or the It's a Wonderful Life, the way that sort of comes around and has a family message. I'm there for that. And then in between, you've got what turns into this fairly well done little Joe Dante riff. I think you're exactly right. That's what I was thinking. It's like, they're not gremlins, but it'll do. And, you know, the gingerbread man sort of comes out of nowhere.
Not gremlins, but it will do.
So, I think this is very well done. Does what it sets out to do. And, you know, if you don't like this, if this isn't your bag, if you don't like it because it's not your bag, no problem. I completely respect that. You know, just, you know, keep on moving. But this does everything I think that it sets out to do. I think it captures that horror comedy tone. Is it? It did get the PG-13, right? It feels like it must have.
I think it did.
Yeah. So it's
like they really kind of, let's just say, look away from the violence.
Yeah. Yeah, and they do. And Michael Dougherty, he said in making this that he really wanted to do something in the spirit of the 80s fun that he grew up in. And he said that, like, the cast were all they were on board with that type of mayhem. So I totally see that in here. I see the Joe Dante stuff. I would suggest even to some more 80s filmmaking we've seen during some of the sort of the creepy suspense scenes. You have the blue lights and the flashlights, almost like a James Cameron type of approach to suspense. And then even too, you've got this animated sequence in there. That's when it jumped out to me. That's, oh my God, this is a Joe Dante thing. It's just this inclusion of the animation in here. Cause it felt like the Howling does precisely that.
Totally forgot it. It's there.
Yeah. And the style of it feels a little bit like Nightmare Before Christmas. So I appreciate that he's borrowing left, right, and center, and he's got his inspirations, but this is a fun film. I think it delivers it. It sort of comes back from its, you know, sort of weird reality into this, you know, nice little packaged family Christmas film. So, yeah, I really, really like this. Looking forward to chatting about it. Crossing my fingers that you liked it too.
Well then, ladies and gentlemen, this is not something that we've pre-programmed, because like, I kind of feel like we're opening what would be like an episode of like not blind spotting, like Film Spotting, which is, you know, like this sort of like one of the longer running podcasts out there where I feel like they sometimes engineer these situations. It's like, okay, well, you take, like, if you like this, then the other guy will never like it. They will never like the same film. I mean, very rarely both of these hosts will like the same film, because they will have to have this sort of the antagonism going. So it's not pre-programmed, but like, I think this film should be retitled as Krampus.
Oh, God, no.
Goodness, I really detested this. Like, it tested me so much. And I was just like, why? I mean, and I was just, like, I started with the same sort of feeling. Like, wow, it has this sort of, like, Christmas Vacation sort of dynamic. Like, this David Koechner is kind of like this sort of Randy Quaid in,
sure,
in Christmas Vacation. Like, this sort of... like this obnoxious uncle who goes, like, he just makes these comments about, like, no gun talk at the table. We should have gone to my brother's on the pig farm. I'm not going to just... look, I kind of enjoyed this. And I think I get the vibe of like, well, let's try and make this into like a Gremlins thing. It's a bit of a Joe Dante sort of stint with, I think, like a little bit of a, you know, like a Guillermo del Toro sort of thing going for it as well.
Mm-hmm, sure, yeah.
I'm like, what you're saying is like, oh, that's a James Cameron vibe. For me, this is kind of like, there are these moments in here that look like they're lifted from different films, like the sort of the snowplow thing with the Hummer and whatever. That's kind of like, are we just like, is Doherty just like trying to jerk off Stanley Kubrick in The Shining, or the sort of the house, the darkness, and some like things in the attic is just like, is this Poltergeist? I get it, you know, like I get it, and the Gremlins and the Burbs and everything, I get it. But you know what? It kind of just feels like I feel like, and this is maybe strangely timely because just recently, Matthew Perry passed away. But I feel like it feels like this sort of episode of Friends where, Jennifer Aniston was making some kind of a holiday trifle, and then she mixed two recipes together. Which, by the way, this is kind of like it wouldn't happen. No single self-respecting recipe book would have like a dessert recipe adjacent to a recipe for like a stew. There'll be a chapter on desserts and chapter on stews. They wouldn't be just like, you know,
book, yeah.
It's in a so she, because you know, she was like, oh, here's my like layer of ladyfingers, gummy bears, something else, whipped cream, ganache, beans, carrots. But you know, slow cooked beef, gravy, more ladyfingers, and then everyone's just like, "What is this?" Meanwhile, Joey's like, "Ladyfingers, good. Whipped cream, good. Meat, good." I feel like you're like Joey in this scenario, where you're just like, "Look at all this mishmash. Doesn't make one bit of sense together." But you know what? I've never turned down good any food in my life, so you know, like I'm gonna roll with it. Meanwhile, I'm just like, this is not my bag, hombre. Because like this movie eventually just really started to annoy me, in a way. Maybe this is also Adam Scott is just not really there for me. Like I'm just.
Where do I know him from? Because.
Do you know him from some of these, like, is it like Judd Apatow type movies?
Maybe it's...
Where, okay. Hold on.
Because he had a TV series that, like, I want to say Apple TV or something over the last couple of years. So I kept seeing his face in my algorithm, but I can't... And he's familiar to me, but I don't really know what I know him from. So I just have this.
Oh, he was Knocked Up.
Yeah, okay.
As Nurse Samuel. Piranha 3D.
Oh, Piranha 3D.
Our idiot brother. He was in Black Mass.
Okay. So I've seen him around. Yeah, he doesn't bother me here at all. I think Parks and Recreation, is that him too? Severance.
Television. Let's see what he's. What's in
Parks and Recreation? I think is him.
Big Little Lies.
Okay.
He is in Severance. He is in. He was Comedy Bang Bang, Parks and Rec, Party Down. He was in Party of Five as well in 7 episodes.
Okay. because I think he's 50 or so. So like he's been around a while. So like. I think he's just one of those working actors that's had decent gigs over the years, and
he is exactly 50.
There you go. It's my age. Good guy.
It's a good vintage.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. So, upon whom does fall the burden of proof here? You or me? So,
I think sort of the, let's just say the tradition dictates it will be your job to convince me I'm full of shit. I think it's. Because I feel this is the more appropriate way of going about it, because I always feel a little bit dirty trying to convince people that what they like is wrong. But yeah, let's just dig into this. What is this film? Because that's my kind of first question. Like, as in, like, why? I'm watching this, and it's kind of like this sort of mishmash. Fair enough. I'll eventually probably end up accepting the answer. It's like, what do you want? It's a mishmash, okay? But what is it? Because even in the synopsis, I asked ChatGPT to concoct on the fly, it was described as a dark fantasy horror comedy. So let's just say, with a Christmas twist. So four things, at least. What is it? What is this film trying to be? Is it trying to be a horror film? Is it trying to be a Christmas film? Is it trying to be a comedy? Is it trying to be a fantasy? Or does it even know what it's trying to be?
Tell me. Yes. I think yes. That,
yes.
All yes, it things. Is. I think Doherty, he quite nails the idea of it being a Christmas film, because oftentimes we've asked this with the other films we've talked about, and I think last year too, I forget what we talked about, but we've had the discussion of what makes this a Christmas film.
Gremlins, I think.
Yeah,
it there must you have go. Been Gremlins.
And I guess
available on our Patreon, patreon.com/UncutGemsPod. Campbell's on it, by the way.
That's right, and Gremlins 2 is about a year ago, so if you sort of scroll through our feed, 50 episodes of the main show or so, you'll find our chat on Gremlins 2 as well. But on these, I think I want to say that, and I don't know if we hit on it precisely or not, I think that the items in Christmas, the Christmas lore, the Christmas iconography, I want to say, or just the things that we associate with Christmas ourselves should be an active part of your Christmas film. And I think that compared to maybe some other Christmas horror films, this film actually gets that right. You know, in the way that, like, is Home Alone a Christmas film? Yeah, sure, because it's got the idea of Christmas vacation baked in there and family values and getting together for Christmas, and then some of the sprinkling of some of this, the rest of the season is all around too.
Operation Ho Ho Ho.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, that probably fits the bill for those reasons, because it embraces what the holiday, you know, means, you know, to a lot of people. And I think this film gets that right. Whereas, you know, even if you take Gremlins doesn't really necessarily feed on that Christmas vibe. This is a family getting together for Christmas, and I think it's perfect.
Gremlins are singing Christmas carols and then
that's true. I don't want to open up last year's deliberations, but this here, sort of starting the same way that I'll say Home Alone does, and that a lot of other Christmas movies do, embracing the holidays and family get-togethers, I think that is a big chunk of what makes this very much a Christmas movie. I think it very much fits that. You know, it's not just, it happens to be Christmas. Like the film P2, which is sort of a cool little thriller in its own right, it just happens to be Christmas. Go just happens to be happening on Christmas. Die Hard.
Exactly.
Sorry to say, just happens to be happening on Christmas. So you can call
it a Christmas movie. No problems releasing this in the summer. Like, exactly.
Yeah. Here, though, I think it's inescapable that, you know, the Christmas season is all about. And the film sort of riffs on that as, you know, the family's torn apart. These, you know, creatures are trying to get in. So, yeah, so it definitely is a Christmas film. I think it is also definitely a horror film. You know, I think that the scenes here in the middle are like when the toys invade. Yeah, it's silly, but I think they're really well done. It works. It totally works for me in the Joe Dante sense, and even in sort of a, you know, well done suspense thriller way, it works. So this is a film that, to me, nails both elements. And as I mentioned earlier, the fact that it sort of rolls back around into sort of a statement about Christmas and family, and, you know, the way Dickens does in Scrooge, it works for me on that level. So yeah, I think this is very much a Christmas horror, and fittingly so in both. Like, I think this is a perfect blend of the two.
So is it a Christmas horror or Christmas fantasy?
That is Christmas horror.
Oh, Jesus.
I think there's a fantasy element in just into where the narrative goes, right? Just mm-hmm. in the way that you can say it's a Wonderful Life is a fantasy or something. But I think it works that works more on a dramatic level than you'd really mm-hmm. call it a fantasy through and through. Like, so like to me, I think this totally fits horror and holidays.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, so my counterpoint to this would be, does this film actually know instinctively what it wants? As in like, oh, I want this sort of look, there's no shame in ripping off other films and like referencing certain things. So like, I appreciate where, so whenever filmmakers pull scenes or pull entire motifs out of films and say like, I want this in my film, and you get to kind of just get off on the fact that you noticed, right? A little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
As long as it coheres. As long as there's something to it. Either it's fun or it's engaging in some way, or it makes sense together in some kind of a way, you know? And this is completely rooted in absolutely no logic whatsoever. This is just me just thinking, I just feel that way. The Doherty and the gang just thought to themselves, like, what do I like, you know? And they were just like, oh, I really liked Home Alone, I liked Gremlins, I liked Christmas Vacation, I like Poltergeist, The Shining, and I like, oh, I like this, I like Pan's Labyrinth as well. And they just took all these movies off the shelf and squeezed and squeezed until they became one film. but even as you squeeze, as if you took a hydraulic press and then took a stack of Blu-rays and squeezed, and somehow they wouldn't shatter into a bajillion pieces, but they would somehow meld into one. You could still be able to kind of, in this block of plastic, distinguish that there are distinctive subsections. As in, like, this movie is Christmas Vacation until it becomes Home Alone, until it becomes Poltergeist, until it becomes Gremlins, until it becomes Pan's Labyrinth, and until it becomes boring. Again, like, or until it becomes until it realizes like, we're actually a Christmas Carol, some kind of thing. So let me pull back a second, give this sort of Viking Santa a little bit of a scene, and then let's pretend it's all a dream. It's gonna come back.
Why has it become boring for you?
I don't know, because I see all these films, all these films in it, I'm just like, wow, that's interesting. And after like two or three of them, I realized that this doesn't really make sense together to me. Like, I'm just not having fun with it. I'm just, I just see that these, like this, in, like the, like it's like an acting exercise to me. Like, these actors were asked to just improvise in front of ever-changing backgrounds.
And it
kind of looks like a big budget Sharknado after a while. It's just like, oh no! And they just react to shit that isn't there. And you just see you realize why Adam Scott doesn't really have a career of like Brad Pitt. Because he's not as good.
Sure, yeah. Come back on that.
So, you know. And at some point I just realized, wow, I'm not having fun with it, because it's all kind of like surface level to me. So I don't even know. I'm watching this. I'm just thinking to myself, like, what is this film trying to be? Is it horror? Because it's not horrific enough. Is it Christmas? It's not Christmassy enough. Is it comedy? Not funny enough. It's kind of like not enough of everything. Like, at some point I'd like some more seasoning on this, you know?
I find it very Christmassy, and, you know, it devotes its fun-filled middle to the horror. I'm sort of shocked by your reaction, actually.
Oh, Jesus, like, this is going to come to blows.
But I'm also, like, for me, the fact that get after real. I watch this, sorry. That's for you, right?
You pick.
I need this.
For you, it's more or less, hold on, for you, it's this.
I'm going to come.
I'm much closer to that than I am to. Goodness. Like, The point I was going to make, when I was sort of reading up on this after I watched it and I saw it only had a $15 million budget, I was further impressed that, because I think that he gets incredible bang for his buck here, this is a really slick looking film. I would have guessed it was $30 to $50 million film. Like it has a sheen and a polish to it that I'm quite impressed with. So I don't know where their cost savings came from, just unless they happen to have a big studio with a city street all sort of ready to go. And then they just had to, you know, put in the fake snow and they were ready to shoot. I don't know where their cost savings came from, but I find that incredibly economical. Like it is, this feels like a much bigger budget piece. So I have an admiration for it in that regard too. And even so far as I like the idea, if you're going to, you know, have a creepy film with a bit of a creature or a monster, that you play it the alien way. You hold back and you create some suspense, and you know, you don't really fully engage with the look or the appearance of the creature until closer to the end. So you get a nice scene where you see Krampus on a roof, but it's sort of a shadow and you don't really fully
see, figure. This gives me like the sense of tone and dread, like what the hell? Like he looks like exactly. He's like the sort of like where the wild things are.
Yes. Yeah, another good take, yeah. This stuff like this, it really works for me. And they sort of avoid the horror and the showing things until the final act. Like we really don't see a lot of Krampus in here. Krampus. We don't really see a lot of them. Like it's his minions Krampus. That are terrorizing this family in a sort of straw dogs type of way.
That's right. Jesus, why would you bring straw dogs to the table?
Home invasion, man.
So many other home invasion films to mention, but no, he goes for the jugular.
Goes for the big one. So for me, I don't have a problem with this mishmash. It totally works, and it's how long is this movie? Like I feel it chugs along, and it's fairly genuine.
90 something.
90, yeah, 90 so it's minutes. Less than 100 minutes, and you know I think it's fairly genuine about what it's being, and it doesn't unfold in its final act with a whole bunch of stupidity, and it sort of explains the sensationalism, you know, in a way that's fair enough and consistent with other holiday gems and classics where, you know, magic is a thing at Christmas. I think it ties into that. Like to me, it's completely a holiday film. And
But it just unfolds its stupidity a little bit earlier. Once it's like, what is this? And then this is where Omi, which is the German speaking grandma, which by the way, I kind of enjoyed this one thing about this film where this sort of the bilingual family, where you have this sort of the grandmother who speaks German to everyone and everyone understands and responds in English. And then she just responds back in German. That's exactly what happens. He's like, here's the kid who just understands German. He just refuses to speak it. It's kind of like my kid. Not with German, but Polish. But yeah, that's kind of what it is. Like, I would speak Polish to her and she would just respond in English. Like, and we're just having this sort of weirdly stupid conversation, like on the street. And people were just like, what is happening? but you know, like there's this granny who just has this secret. She knows what's happening. It's like, oh my goodness. And all of a sudden she goes like, well, actually, I know what this is. This is this demon. He's Santa's shadow. He's Krampus. And he's, you know, like it's one time when we're just during World War II, when we're really sad and lost all hope. Then we summoned Krampus and he killed everyone. I'm like, who signed off on this? Like it makes no, like this is just like wow, like good, like it's good we didn't go like full on X-Men and just all of a sudden like weave in the Holocaust in this as well. Like,
Jesus, an Exorcist prequel.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like God isn't here, priest. God isn't here today, priest. Wow.
We need an anti-Santy, and this is him. And this is as good a backstory as any.
No, but just like what I'm saying is, then okay, like I feel like there's, like what you're saying, like there's the, you know, what goes to places. I like my answer to this, like where, Because for me, this film, maybe this is the byproduct of the fact that they're kind of hamstrung by the PG-13 rating that they need to hit. But still, it just, like, things are inconsequential in here. Like, someone gets bitten by a bear, as in a teddy bear, a demonic teddy bear, right? And I was just like, no, nothing happens. I was just like, I would expect someone would lose a limb, or they'll be bleeding or whatever, or someone would disappear and never come back. And then they just... like, there will be these dark elves, they just, like, show up and just touch people. And I was just like, you're not scary one bit. Like, this whole demon, this because he looks like a very sort of dehydrated Viking.
Yes.
It's just, like, he does the, and he's just like, but he doesn't do anything himself either. I'm just like, no. Like, there's an interesting scene, I think, where, what's her name? Beth. Is it Beth?
The girl, yeah.
The girl who goes after her boyfriend or something, and then she just hides under a car, right? And this hooved monster is just like circling around the car. But then, no, he doesn't really... I would expect a conventional sort of situation where she just thinks he's gone and just drags her out of the car and that cut to black and it's a jump scare. But no, like, he drops like a jack in the box and I was like, what is this in this jack in the box? And all of a sudden, like, and something happens, I don't know what. She screams and you think to yourself, like, okay, I'm not afraid. I'm not jolted into some kind of a state I'm not knocked out of my comfort zone. I'm just confused. So I don't know. How does it work for you? Like, just walk me through this. Yeah. Like, why do you think it's like, no, look at this. I had so much fun. Like, why? How is this happening?
Yeah, like, this is worth digging into. Like, because I guess when I watch a Christmas movie, and there's some that stand out, like, I like Christmas Vacation, probably not as much as you, but I like that. And I've turned around on things like Home Alone, because I thought that was sort of junk for the longest time.
Look, this film has been fed to us on a steady diet every year for like 3 decades now, and I think, like, at some point it's probably fine to say, like, you know what, enough is enough. I think I've seen enough of Kevin.
Kevin. Well, I saw that, for instance, I saw that in theaters, and I was in, you know, high school, and I was too old for it, so I was just had the, oh, this is stupid type, I mean, of response.
Oh, you were in yourself too cool for school age at the
that's,
time.
Yeah, that's, well,
Kevin,
that's exactly.
You know what the French would call les incompetents,
but
which is a phrase I have adopted in my real vernacular.
That's actually one that we have around here too. However,
exactly.
What I will say about that is that it's incredibly fun to watch with your kids, right? So when you have a family,
what, Krampus,
you start,
or this. No,
Home Alone. Krampus is gonna be, because the boys and I are gonna watch this because this is great.
Fingers crossed, they're gonna hate it. They're gonna hate this shit.
But watching Home Alone with children, you know, sort of opens your eyes up to, you know, this. There is an escapist feel here. There's a vibe that you can latch onto and enjoy and see stuff on a different level than, you know, maybe you saw it the first time. So I have this with some holiday films, right? So is it the Christmas Chronicles? Second one was garbage, but the first Netflix one with Kurt Russell as Santa, I sort of like that. It has the magic of Christmas thing in it. So if you watch something in a certain way, then I can get with the program. So with Christmas movies, I can get with the program if it's not taking itself too seriously. And this film never takes itself too seriously, which I appreciate. Well,
apart from that bit about the World War II, I suppose.
Well, you need a backstory, you know.
But do you really? Do you need to, like, all I need is for the army to say, like, this is Krampus. What's Krampus? Is the guy who comes in here on the day before Christmas to kill all the naughty kids. That's all the backstory I require.
True, but if you're going to do a Nightmare Before Christmas thing and you've got this homage planned for that, and you want to go down this path where you're, you know, retracing the steps of the Howling and have an animated backstory, you know, great, this serves its purpose fine. So anyway, like, I feel that I vibe with this pretty much right away as a holiday film, and it doesn't betray that, you know. In fact, it embraces that idea. It embraces the idea that family doesn't get along, and then they do have to get along because David Koechner is a total
dickwad.
He's a total obnoxious Republican turd. He's a gun-toting, you know, redneck, and so are his kids. And you know, the family that's hosting the affair, Adam Scott and Toni Collette, they're normal people, perhaps wealthy, and maybe you've got the Democrat and Republican thing going on. Whatever, you know, holidays bring people together. So too does having a house under siege by gremlins and trolls and elves and gingerbread men and, you know, living Jacks in the box. Jack in the boxes.
It should be Jacks in the box.
I think it should be Jacks in the box. Just weird.
Jack in the boxes seems...
There's two prominent nouns
in that. It's passers-by, not passerbys.
We always put the S on the prominent noun, but what's more important, Jack or box? Anyway, we'll say Jack's in the box.
Hold on, let me ask ChatGPT. Hold on.
We're going to be a grammat. We strive for grammatical correctness and plurals of compound nouns.
Almost there.
Oh.
Jack's in the box. Or. Thank you. Jack's okay. In the box.
I looked it up here. Britannica.com says that either or is fine.
Well, Britannica can suck a dick. Like, ChatGPT is very decisive.
Isn't it, though? I prefer Jack's in the box. I think it holds up better anyway.
Britannica doesn't know. Like, this is what... Like, I like a good bullshitter, you know? Like, ChatGPT, I know it makes shit up, but at least it's kind of like really confident about it.
It's confident and it's
it's like, what's baloney. Wrong with this? Something's definitely wrong with the left phalange, if you say so. Like, there's no some, like, you know, like someone's like very well read and educated, they'll be just like, I'm not sure, like it could be, you know, like if you look at it that way, then this parameter suggests that it may be, like, there's a good possibility, because, you know, like a very smart person probably doesn't really want to be wrong. So you really want to leave yourself like an out. So Britannica is one of those, just like this very well-read intellectual girls. Like, well, you could think like it knows it's Jack's in the box, but you know, like sometimes, you know, like maybe the other one. So, you know, pick one, you know, I think there are subtleties about it. Just make up your mind. Okay. Make up.
You know. Fair enough. Now,
where you know, was just, I?
On that, I'll say ChatGPT once told me that Kevin Bacon was an American Beauty. So,
if he say so, okay.
So, anyway, there's the credibility thing. But anyway, where were we? Jack in the box.
I mean, I like the confidence of ChatGPT when he asked him. It's like, could you cite a paper, like a scientific paper about this copper catalyzed coupling of boronic acids and alkenes? Sure, here's a reference, and it will give you a reference with like authors, like a string of Chinese names, journal reference. A year, a volume, and the page number. This thing doesn't exist. You go and look at the volume will not be will be correct. The year will be correct. The pages will be wrong because the paper is different. And it's just like this, and it will just give you an abstract. It will tell you what the paper is about. And I'm just like, wow, you've just Boris Johnsoned your way into my life. Just bullshitting like on a white horse. And everything.
With incredible confidence. Yeah.
Exactly. One thing I wanted to quickly add, because I've already barged in, I was just saying, like, you know, the family, Toni Collette's and Adam Scott's family, this would be the sort of, what are the UK's Home Secretary, who has just got sacked, who's a really despicable person, by the way, Suella Braverman, whom people refer to as Cruella Braverman, because she really hates immigrants for some reason. And she really wants them to be sent to Rwanda because apparently this is a safe place to put people. She once described the left wing, the Labour Party opposite, right? She was just like, they're the Guardian reading tofu eating woke erratic. And I remembered that because, you know, like, she's a despicable person, but this, that phrase, you know, like, you gotta hand it to her. That's actually kind of fun.
Yeah. What a quote. Yeah. Well, you know, and I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for Donald Trump, where he threw up trade restrictions between the US and Canada, which we had a free trade agreement. You weren't allowed to do that, except in the situation where you think that there is a security threat from the other country. So he cited the security threat against Canada, and someone questioned on him, and he's like, a security threat from Canada? Well, yeah, they attacked the White House in the War of 1812. So he had that answer ready to go. So gotta give him some points.
I mean, someone probably fed him this answer. He goes like, "Well, when they ask you this, like, tell them that." It's like, and he goes like, "Kellyanne, I really appreciate your alternative facts. Thanks."
Anyway, this family.
This family. Jesus. Okay, so
can so you have issues with this, the family? Right? I think the family is fine, right? You know, they're not.
Tony Collette's fine. I'll say this. Tony Collette's fine.
Adam Scott's fine. I can see that he might get to me in other movies. Like, again, I don't really know this guy. I think he's fine here. I sort of like the kid. I have no issues with the girl. It is very conventional. It's very straightforward, but I don't necessarily have a problem with that because, you know, you need these sort of plain characters to serve their narrative function. And I think they do just fine. And, you know, in terms of being a contrast to the foils who come into the room, the sister and the in-laws when they come in and move in and take over the house, I think they're perfect foils, you know, for these goofballs that are sort of moving in and taking over the house. So I don't see major issues. I can see plainness, but yeah, tell me, what were your issues because with these guys?
I see the family as a facsimile of the Griswolds, right? That's kind of how I think Michael Dougherty and his friends also see it, because they really milk the Christmas Vacation spirit out of this sort of aspect of the story, right? And then, okay, well, if you do that as a filmmaker and say, like, okay, so what are you trying to capture, right? What the Griswolds had going for them was the fact that they were completely dysfunctional yet extremely likable. As in, like, you can see that, you know, like, you really hate the fact, like, these people are extremely sort of, like, this family just doesn't work. Like, there's just so much horseshit going on in this place. But somehow, when they stick together, things just happen for them. So they will unleash hell on earth. Like, just, like, their house is just, like, on fire. There's like noxious gas in the sewer. There's the, you know, I don't know. There's squirrels, dogs barfing, the turkey's dry. You know, Randy Quaid is just like wearing what we now know is a Canadian tuxedo. Like, but somehow it makes sense because, like, but they don't have this kind of energy. And I just feel like, so, okay, if they don't have this kind of energy, then, I mean, so why are we trying to pretend that they are Griswolds? And I think that the only answer I can give you is that because the filmmakers liked the Christmas vacation film. So what kind of energy are they having? And I don't think they have any energy. As in, like, they don't have, like, there should be some, like, in a Christmas film, there should be some kind of a conflict they're trying to resolve internally. As in, like, if this was supposed to be a conventional narrative, right, there would be especially a Christmas story, as in some kind of a fairy tale of some description, where this arc is supposed to be kind of unexpected, sort of, I don't know, something. There should be some kind of a conflict, and there's like a vestige of it, as in the boy hates his family for Christmas. He writes a letter, then gets, he writes a letter, gets humiliated, and then he says he wishes his family went away. This is the Home Alone moment, because they really disappear in Home Alone, and he thinks it's his fault, and he really likes it for like 5.5 minutes until he has to go shopping. But then there should be some kind of a drive of, okay, well, like, you know, in Home Alone, the things are not right, that they're trying to kind of just fix the family and bring them all together because there are external forces descending on the house, trying to kind of get you in the spirit of like, I need Kevin to defend the house, and I need his mom to really make it back quick. That's kind of the main driver. And here, the kid just hates his family, and they're stuck in a house where shit happens that you don't see because they didn't have too much money to spend on the special effects, so they just react to stuff that isn't there.
Oh, I think that's harsh. Yeah, no, I don't see it that way at all. I see that this family is they have to learn to get along, and I think that's all we need. They're polar opposites. They have to come together. There is also this notion of both families in the household have to protect your flock, or whatever they say. You have to protect your flock, and that means something different to each of them, because one's packing heat and, you know, the other just, you know, is trying to have a good relationship with the children or whatever. For me, that's enough. From what I'm hearing, and I know that Christmas Vacation holds a very special place in your heart, and to a certain extent, I think Home Alone may as well, much more so than me. I've seen Christmas Vacation a couple times, but it's not one I watch every year. I wonder if, because the facsimile that we get here, or the homage, or, you know, the Michael Dougherty Appreciation Club on display here, I wonder if this pales in comparison immediately, and then maybe that sort of sullies the experience from that point on. Maybe, do you think? Like, not maybe, to analyze you instead of the film.
I mean, maybe. Maybe this is, I mean, fully acknowledge that this could be like a me problem, not a film problem. but then again, I see like a bunch more. And actually the fact that I noticed that, oh, it's trying to do like a riff on Christmas Vacation, I actually appreciated that. Okay, let's do this. But then they don't do anything interested in. They kind of check it off the list and move on, right? And then they check Home Alone off the list and they move on. And they check off Gremlins off the list and they move on. And I'm just thinking like, okay, look, have the balls to do something cool with this. Or if you're trying to mix and match these things, just like add something to it, because just putting things side by side doesn't make a collage. You have to do something with these sort of scraps, right? Just give them a meaning that's kind of just, I don't know, all encompassing. Like give it some kind of a bite. And it doesn't really have one. I mean, it's trying to be this sort of like a Brothers Grimm fairy tale, which is just like, doesn't get a happy ending. And it's just like, what kind of an ending is it anyway? What are you trying to teach me with this? What are you trying to sell me? And it's just like, oh, it's because families have to stay together, so they get locked in a Christmas bubble. Is that correct?
I think it's open for interpretation.
It's a bit of a Twilight Zone-y, but you know,
and that, you know, I imagine that's not your biggest beef with it, but I just, again, like, I'm sort of floored that your reaction is as strong as it is, but, you know, but for me, and looking at why I like it, even though you're cramming all these elements together, and I think this sort of pastiche, if you want to call it that, of, you know, 80s references and 90s references, it's in here. It's still functioning in a narrative that has forward thrust. It's got the familiar pieces of, you know, home invasion, and there's a monster or an unknown element trying to get in. So, you know, the fact that the first exposure to the creatures is, you know, little minions that are toys and crazy Christmas toys and also, Christmas Puppet tree Master. Angels. And
have you seen Puppet Master, by the way?
I have.
It was like a direct-to-video from like late 80s, early 90s.
Seems to me, is that with Donald Sutherland?
No. This is, I think, Puppet Masters, and that's a...
Okay, that's the one I saw.
That's a Heinlein adaptation.
Yes, it is, yes.
No, I mean the Puppet Master, as in like about a guy and his demonic toys.
Nope.
Which is kind of like this sort of invasion of the gingerbread man and the teddy bear and the real creepy-looking doll. That's kind of like straight out of this kind of shitbaggery. I mean, Puppet Master as a film, I bet you money this is probably like a nostalgia item for Dougherty. I could
sure, yeah,
bet $20 right now and say like he probably saw this when he was a kid or something and he really liked it. He's probably my age, isn't he?
Oh, Dougherty? Doherty's my age.
Yeah. No, he's more your age, I suppose. Yeah. He's 49, I suppose. But yeah, so yeah, but he would be in he would be just about in the same, like he would be going through his formative years in the sort of like mid to late 80s.
Yeah. Agreed. Like I think he cited Dark Crystal as something that you know, inspired him a little bit. All I can see is that maybe in the elves and some of the character orchestration and puppet work and what have you, special effects, I can see that. But
do you like Dark Crystal, by the way?
I didn't see it.
Oh, right. Because I watched like The Labyrinth and Dark Crystal. And then, hold on, let me just quickly pull up my... Hold on. You've reviewed this film on Letterboxd. 1.5 out of 5 I gave this.
Dark Crystal?
Dark Crystal, one? Yeah.
Yeah, it's not beloved.
No, but it's just The Labyrinth, same deal. I bet you money I gave it like 1 star. I kid you not. This is, yeah. And it just tells you exactly because this movie is trying to be nostalgic about that kind of stuff. And I just do not have nostalgia for it. I think because like I don't want to say famously because I'm not famous, but like some people were just like, I really love American Werewolf in London. Hate it. Teen Wolf. I love Teen Wolf. Hate it. you know, it's all these sort of like fantasy films or these sort of like these films that were big with teens back in the Revenge of the Nerds. Gross.
Sorry, do you see this as a fantasy?
Yeah.
Like going back to that question, like you see this as having a strong fantasy element?
I think it's more of a fantasy than it is a Christmas film even. Because the sort of the Christmas iconography, like by the way, like this Christmas iconography is kind of a very superficial. As in like it's the setting and then and you have to agree that the Germans also know that there is this thing called Krampus. But then it was just like, where's Santa? it's kind of like, hold on, I found my review of the... Also 1.5 out of 5. So, oh goodness.
Yeah, I'm not fans of those ones. And was it The Neverending Story and like that style of thing? I think it was I really didn't like when I was younger, was it Return to Oz?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be another one that's sort of in that ilk, Neverending Story. Like they didn't really appeal to me too much.
See, I appreciate The Wizard of Oz, for instance, but like the Return to Oz, I don't think I've seen. Also, by the way, this is what I wrote for Labyrinth. Complete with a bog riddled with what can only be sphincter-esque structures making farting noises, Labyrinth is a shambolic failure in balancing fantasy, nostalgia, and tact. That's kind of how I feel about this movie a little bit as well. It's kind of like, it's a mess for me. But, you know, I can see like if like The Wizard of Oz is a classic, this kind of feels like...
Oh, I'm not saying Wizard. I'm saying Return to Oz, the one with Firouzza Balk in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that has that sort of that has that awkward 80s fantasy thing to me.
80s fantasy is also for me that's an interesting thing to kind of get into because sometimes I think I missed out on quite a lot of them. Like I remember we did Crawl like years and years ago, and I'm just not a fan of this. I can appreciate it's like look all the artistry, but this movie makes no sense and doesn't really cohere. The only real fantasy films from that era I like had Schwarzenegger in them.
So, yeah. Or Harrison Ford.
Or Harrison Ford. Yes, exactly. Yeah. If you agree that Star Wars is a fantasy, which you should. But, you know, like the fantasy elements, like iconography-wise, there are elements of it. Like Krampus, the silhouette of Krampus is interesting. But once you see him, when this sort of when he's like standing over this pit, when he goes like, what's this? Drops Stevie into the bog and goes like, bye, take me, and just goes like, hey, I'm gonna take the boy, and it's just like, no, I'm gonna kill you anyway. I'm just like, what are we trying to say?
Well, yeah, that it's coming to the end of a sort of a Scrooge type dream, so I'm okay with that. One thing I'll say about Krampus is, I don't like that his face doesn't really move. Like it looks like he's wearing a mask. I'm okay. I really like the look, but the fact that his face seems frozen is sort of peculiar to me.
And it's not peculiar to me at all. It's something that I think you should have known, because you said this film, like, I'm really amazed this film cost only $15 million to make.
Yeah.
That's why.
No, that's one choice. That's
what you get in return.
No, that's one choice. So, do you feel this looks cheap?
Yes.
Really? I mean, oh my goodness. So,
in some ways, they kind of get away with it. Like, when the toys attack, looks the part, I think, because they managed to hide a lot of it in the dark, although the gingerbread man, not really for me. But like the bear and the little sort of porcelain doll, really well done. But sort of like the dark elves is just, you can see like, oh well, we're only down to this much money, and so let's just put some rags on these people. And the big demon guy, all of a sudden, like, we're committing to this being a CGI creation, where I just think to myself, would it have been better as a full-on practical effect? Because for me, this like the actual Krampus, when they build up to him as well, because you never see him, you never see the face, you see kind of like a silhouette or a shadow or a hoof or something like this. And then once they show him, it's like, this should be a big thing. This should be like Predator taking off his mask. And you're like, I feel cheated.
Oh, no, like not at all. Like, the stillness of his face, yeah, for sure. But I think he's a haunting character, and we don't need full on horror. Like, we're in PG-13 horror land here, and I appreciate that. And if this is an R film, then it's going to look different, and it might have a different impact. But, you know, for it's a PG-13 land horror film, I think this nails it. I don't think you need a lot with Krampus. It's almost like the final act with Alien, mm-hmm. where you have a slow build, you get little moments where you see him. A lot of it is just the threat that's on the outside of the house. You know something's coming. It's about the drama of the survivors having to, you know, what do we do to survive? What do we do to get the daughter that's lost? You know, it's this type of panic drama that's leading the film. And, you know, I really actually like how Krampus is handled. And you don't have a big scene with him at the end. The fact that if we have too much more time with these elves, they're probably not going to fit, but we get a very small dose of them because it's right in the final moments of the climax.
And they don't do anything with them either. They're just like, all these elves, and they kind of keep touching them. And just like, this is very theatrical and very sort of protracted. Oh. Cause they were just like, descend on their car, but they don't do anything. And just all of a sudden, like, okay, I have to buy into the fact that the kid knows how to, I don't even know how to drive stick. And whatever.
Well, they're pulling the family members away. The family members are getting picked off one by one.
They kind of sink under the snow, I think. Bye, honey.
And maybe that's a budget limitation, but that's fine.
I know this is something that Stephen King used to talk about, like, back in the day, where it's just, you know, like the sort of the monster behind the door problem, where, you know, like, if you build up to stuff for long enough, there's this sort of mismatch. Because you will never be able to come close to what the reader is imagining. Like, you'll never be able to kind of match the imagination of the spectator or the reader, right? Fine. But then, like, sometimes you get away with it. As in, like, in 1979's Alien, one of the best films ever made, I suppose. Maybe unfair comparison. But, you know, like, you build up to the alien, and once you actually see it in the end, you're just like, wow. This guy looks amazing, you know? Meanwhile, you have this sort of like the build-up of, like, in El Laberinto del Fauno, you'll kind of build up into certain things, like some people you eventually see, and you just think to yourself, like, this design looks interesting and cool, or scary, or all of the above, right? Meanwhile, in here, we build up to him, there's this sort of, you know, the world where the wild things are, sort of this silhouette that's just like bobbing in on the roof, and there's this guy in the shadow where he speaks to Omi and just gives her the finger, and at the end you see him and you just think to yourself, you know, it was better when it was like left in the dark, because I didn't know, because you just think, oh, does it have horns? And just, no, it doesn't really, or is this the helmet? I don't know, but it looks like it's just kind of like a video designer's sort of antithesis to Santa, like an anti-Santa.
Well, yeah, you know what? Like, and for me, that's why it's acceptable, because this guy has to be the anti-Santy. He has to, that's what he has to add up to. He has to add up to Santa only on the dark, in the dark realm. So he's got the size to me. He's got the stature. He's creepy. He's also got some similarities with, you know, with the coat and the preference of entering a house through a chimney. Like, so to me, he does stack up. But you're actually mentioning something, like, just as we sort of dwell on the alien thing and the Stephen King conversation, I imagine it's a problem with a lot of horror films, or a lot of films that, you know, might be trying to add horror elements or creature design. Because what do you do? It's really hard to imagine something special, right? Because the industry revolves around sameness and, you know, copying and similarities. And this, it relies on copycat filmmaking more than it relies on homage. And so it's really hard to come up with something truly unique. And you do have these special examples of it, right? And those end up being classics and standout things like Alien. And even though it's not necessarily a creature-based thing, but capturing the audience's imagination the way that something like Star Wars did, or Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Look, Jaws. See the shark for goddamn ever until Roy Scheider just chums in the water and just see the shark coming out of it, and you're out, like, of wow.
Behind him. Yeah.
even though you know what a shark looks like, it's still a reveal, right? In which case, in here, like, you don't get the exhilaration of...
Yeah, and that's fine, because yes, it is. It's not a revolutionary film, and a lot of the heavy lifting in this film, to me, is just, it devotedly sticks to a holiday formula, you know, in terms of the family and the, you know, coming together at the end. And further to that, there's a lot of heavy lifting also done by, you know, the joy that goes into all these homages and these, you know, just this type of movie. I want to do a Joe Dante type of film, and this has to go sort of Gremlins zany in a while. And that's why David Koechner is there, I think, is to just sort of, you know, firmly be the Joe Dante plant, or the guy that comes from sitcoms, or the Randy Quaid character. Like, he's there for that element. That's his background. I think Koechner is largely a sitcom guy. Yeah, to me, all the elements are in play, and there's a lot of fun that I feel they're having on set, and that sort of comes through. So to me, everything falls in place, and I don't need this to be Alien or Jaws, where the threat that comes out at me at the end, and out at the characters, the survivors, it doesn't need to be something I haven't seen before that's going to blow my mind. It's not that film, because it's basing it on it. You know, the film is being based on homages to fun films from the 80s and 90s. And I'm down with that. I think that's sort of an acceptable way to go about your business. You know, as long as you're, you know, sticking true to your narrative, and, you know, you're sort of following the path that, you know, takes you to the end in a solid way. Like, you're not arsing up the ending. You're not, you know, dropping the ball different places. You don't have really annoying elements or crap in here that doesn't work. You know, like, to me, it's just, in one hand, keeping everything really, really simple and just sort of towing the line and following the narrative. But at the same time, yeah, having a lot of fun, like, as I just feels fun all the way through.
But do you think, like, the character of Krampus, Krampus, I mean, I get that this is like part of some kind of a Germanic mythology, that this is something that people actually, you know, on some level, like, believe, and they practice this, just on that night, they will dress up and just chase girls around, I suppose, or something, right? But then, do you think there's any sort of, like, staying power to this character? Do you think this was kind of envisioned as, like, well, if we turn this character that's this sort of mythical creature that people kind of, like, some people still kind of just think it's fun to play with, like, culturally speaking, can you turn him into, like, Freddy Krueger, or Jason Voorhees. Is there an attempt to do something of that ilk in here?
I'm going to say no, because the Krampus character by this studio, and I forget which studio it is.
Is it Legendary or?
Yeah, Legendary, but there's been no effort to, you know, come up with another one. And I find that interesting since it made back 4 times its budget. Just a sec here. However,
I don't know why, right?
It's weird. Also around this time, though, you have in some, you know, straight to video, very, very cheapo, you have in 2013, Krampus the Christmas Devil, 2015 as well, Krampus the Reckoning, 2016, Krampus the Devil Returns, 2016 again, Krampus Unleashed, 2018, Krampus Origins, 2017, Mother Krampus. Krampus is the villain in A Christmas Horror Story. So there's something with this character that some people think is marketable. But like, I'm really interested in the fact that, you know, Legendary and whoever the bigger distributor behind this, they weren't interested in it, because I feel it does everything. Like me, I feel it does everything right, and it sort of fits, and it hits the PG-13 mark, which, you know, if you're going to release something like this on a more mainstream type of level, then that's probably an important piece. Otherwise, it becomes those straight to video titles. But I'm really surprised that they didn't try to do something else, because it feels like it could have been a franchise.
Here's a stupid question. Like, it's kind of like a smoking weed in a dorm room kind of question. What does Grinch have that Krampus doesn't? Because Grinch has become a cultural item, even though he effectively is like Krampus and like guy who ruins Christmas, right? Only without killing, I suppose. But, you know, like, why is one a part of a conversation that spans generations, the other one isn't?
I think because Dr. Seuss, and then since his death, the estate of Dr. Seuss has continued to promote that man's books and art for, you know, 60 years. Like, he's an industry. He's been in industry since his second or third book, I think it was. You know, Theodore Geisel, just he became a living legend very early in his career writing books, not early in his career, but in his early in his career writing kids' books. And so you can trace it back to that. So, you know, I grew up with Dr. Seuss stuff all around me. I imagine you did as well. So it became a worldwide brand. It became a worldwide brand, you know, Dr. Seuss. So Cat in the Hat was a thing, and the Grinch was a thing. And we grew up with this. So I had the TV special of the 1960s, seven or whatever it was, Grinch, that always aired sometime during Christmas season. It was always something that I was familiar with. So to me, that the answer to that question is probably branding. And, you know, the Christmas legend, the mythos of the Krampus character, I'm going to say is regional. So I'm not familiar with its legend or the lore or the stories that go along with it, really, until you know, this film came along. So I think that's probably the answer to the question, is that, you know, Geisel's stuff came to popularity during the 50s, I'm going to say, which was, you know, the time where, you know, Disney and Hanna-Barbera, like, this stuff that was made into cartoons was then being marketed to kids and ended up on lunch pails. So it just, Dr. Seuss was a living brand for a long time. And then, but it's just there. That's your answer, I think.
Because I suppose, like, Krampus, it is a regional sort of piece of mythology, because it's confined to Germany, I think. But at the same token, like, okay, well, Norse mythology is confined to Scandinavia. And everyone knows, like, if you tell someone, like, what the store looks like, you'd have an, you know, imagine, like if someone asks you, like, imagine a Valkyrie, you'd probably have, like, you'd probably conjure an image that looks more or less like something you'd recognize in a painting, probably, right? Mm-hmm. Because they have this sort of weird cultural penetration that kind of just ventures outside. And I'm just wondering, I suppose this is just like a footnote because it's just this one thing that I suppose some German parents would probably scare their kids with. Just like, if you're naughty, Krampus is going to go and come and take you away in his sack or something. And they'll be just like, oh, no, I'm not going to be naughty. And so you're like, if you're nice, then you're like, Santa's going to come and give you a present. If not, then Krampus is going to come in here and violate you or something. Just these Germans, they really don't really think in shades of gray.
They don't mess around. Very silent night, deadly night. Punish.
Yeah, exactly. But then, see, like, oh, on this, I'm just like, Santa is more of an icon for Christmas. This guy is kind of like, who's this guy? Who's this bozo, right? So in a way, like, for me to make a Christmas villain, all you need to do is just take a mentally deranged person and put him in a Santa outfit and give him an axe. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, like, you got yourself a Christmas slasher.
At some point, like, I think that if you're playing around with mythology or a well-established brand, you come up with this idea that, okay, well, how can we have a new bad guy, the anti this, like, and you have it in Nintendo's Mario Brothers because you have Wario. You just sort of flip. Let's have the opposite of Mario and let's have a Wario. Let's have the opposite of Santa and he's Krampus. And there happens to be a legend in this, region in Europe that we can sort of draw upon. And, so for me, that's all I need as a villain in here. So going back to the idea of this being special in that regard, I don't think it's trying to break new boundaries. I think Doherty's a filmmaker. I think he just likes having fun in the genre. And I think that's fine. And if he's inspired by other sources, then that's great. I sort of want to go back and watch Trick or Treat again. I remember liking that quite a bit. Have you ever seen that one?
No, I have not.
It's pretty fun, but now I wonder through this, which lens you'll see it. But it's pretty
one
fun.
Of those that, is this one of those that's a little bit problematic now?
I don't remember a lot of it. I just remember seeing it and thought that was really sort of fun. And I think it's sort of not an anthology, but you have a number of different storylines that hop around. And I'm sort of a sucker for those fool around with the narrative structure pieces. Like, that's sort of one of the things that I sort of naturally gravitate to. So I quite like Trick or Treat. And this is his other film. Otherwise, this guy's more of a screenwriter, I think.
Yeah, he's been writing all the Godzilla films.
Returns and... that's the third one he directed. He directed one of them.
Did he direct the one that I really don't like? Let me just double check.
King of the Monsters.
Okay, that's the one I didn't, didn't like. That's the one.
Don't remember liking that either.
But he wrote like Godzilla vs. Kong and that's going to come out like next year, which is X Kong.
Okay, X2, I think, like the second X-Men film.
He also did X-Men Apocalypse.
Did he just do the story for that or did he write the whole thing?
Story, yes.
Yeah.
Superman Returns, Urban Legends, Bloody Mary. I was this close to buying the, because 88 Films has a sale and they have a whole Urban Legend, trilogy.
Okay. How many Urban Legends films are there?
Three, I think. It's three.
Maybe I'm thinking.
Yeah, three. Cheap. Urban Legend, maybe. Urban Legend's Final Cut, and Urban Legend's Bloody Mary.
Yeah, there's 90s horror for you. At least the first one.
Yeah, first one's the 90s, and then we're in the 2000s already. Yeah. And the second one was like co-written by Scott Derrickson.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway, so where was I?
Krampus.
Krampus. I mean, like this sort of idea that, you know, it doesn't need to break new ground. That's great. Like, I understand that. All it needs to be is a serviceable piece of entertainment, but it needs to do some servicing in order to do this for me. And I feel like, okay, I don't feel like scared. I don't feel like these people are having fun. I didn't vibe with this. That's kind of like the long and short of it. And I don't understand necessarily why. All I see this, is it because it's this sort of collage that doesn't have this sort of thread bringing it all together to just make this cohesive picture, because all I see is just I'm checking off references. And then if you want to see how to check off references in a way that actually makes sense and elevates these references together, just watch Kill Bill. Like, it's kind of like you could accuse Kill Bill of just checking off movies that he may, with the sort of caveat that he may not have seen most of them, right? But the idea is like it's pulling out scenes and motifs out of films and then just elevating them into something else. In here, I don't see the elevation part. As in, like, in which for me, this would be the fun bit. As in, like, how do you bring Christmas Vacation, Nightmare on Elm Street, Gremlins, and Poltergeist and all these things together and just give it some kind of a twist, give it a bite, just make it comment on it somehow, or just make it interesting. And it for me, it doesn't. Like, for I just look at these images and I wish for this film to end. And then as it ends, I just think, like, I wish it would have ended differently. You know, which actually a good question. Like, do you like the ending?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I think that this takes.
Why?
I'm vibing with the Christmas spirit on this. It has this, the family comes together and they look at things under the, they get their gifts under the tree and they look at one another and they've come together and they've seen through their differences. And, you know, for at least this while, we don't have to talk politics, and you know, the redneck is respecting the other father, and so that's I'm vibing on that, and I think it's natural for a film to want to shut the door with a very sort of creepy note. So you've got this idea that all these households that have been visited by Krampus are in one way or another recorded in, you know, Krampus's lair, and that's these little snow globes that have the house in it. Totally fine with that.
Are they recorded or like just captured and enslaved? Because he's taking them all away into hell, and hell is just a house with a Christmas tree in it.
I don't necessarily see that. I can see how someone would have that take. I don't think it's that. I think that Krampus is still always there, like in the same way that Omi was visited in her youth. So Krampus was always part of her life, and maybe she had this sense, well, Krampus is always there, he's always watching, and that's part of the legend. And also that's sort of a nice dark parallel to Santa. Santa's always watching, see if you're good, see if you're bad. So that's what this piece is.
How creepy is this, by the way? How creepy is it? Santa's always watching, like, is he really? And he's going to invade your house as you're not looking, just enter through a chimney or a keyhole or whatever, because, you know, like, some people don't have a chimney. And then just like leave stuff around, eat a carrot and a mince pie or something, like, or a cookie, depending on where you live. And here we do mince pies. I've always eaten the mince pies. but yeah, like, I'm just thinking to myself, because it's Krampus as a concept. Like, if we were to just make sure that this is not just confined to Germany, as in, like, is this like actual Satan coming up to our world? Because it's Christmas and he's received one too many letters from dyslexic kids. Dear Satan, I've been really good this year.
So is there a world where Jesus had a twin brother that fell out of the manger and was left abandoned, and
Craig. Craig Christ.
I don't know, if you unpack the whole Santa thing, it is creepy, and, you know, in a way, Krampus is the legend that's honest with us, because he is creepy. Someone breaking into your home on Christmas night is creepy.
The people who made this piece of shit are in this room.
But like, he's just like, Santa's Krampus just honest with it.
Get real. Like,
really?
The whole Santa thing is, you know, it's a lie. It's creepy. You know, Krampus, you get what you get, you know?
Is there a doctor around?
You're the one who deconstructed the Santa mythos. This is a film that presents Krampus as a bastard, and he is.
But you're just like, I just appreciate how you're just making a stand, you know? Like, at least Krampus is honest, okay?
yes.
I mean, You really liked it. I mean, might as well just leave it at that and just say, like, look, unless there's something else you'd like to bring in, because I think I'm kind of, I've kind of gone through all my notes.
No, I don't think I have I don't have anything else on my chest. Yeah, no, I'm good.
Oh, am I gone? Am I gone? Hello?
You were gone. You're back now.
Oh, Jesus. Because even when, like, it feels like I disconnected from the Matrix, like...
You're back.
So, do you have anything else that you want to bring into the table, or...
Oh, no, you missed that. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay, so final thoughts? I know, it's just 5 stars. You love it. Tell me.
Get real.
Hold that get real handy, because we'll need it for your take. But no, for me, this is 4 stars. This is an uncut gem. This is a 4 stars. This is a pleasant surprise.
People who made this piece of shit are in this room.
Ah, this is where I need my soundboard. No, this is a fun Christmas film. And, you know, I jumped on board with this right away. And I'm not one. I don't think I would necessarily like Adam Scott as a leading man often. That's a vibe I get. Mm-hmm. He's perfectly fine here. David Koechner, I have seen him in some stuff. He was a recurring character in, what sitcom was it? The Goldbergs. He was in that. Mm-hmm. And he's someone, his shtick gets a little old. He's fine here. I think this works well. I think that this is connected to, you know, the Dickens holiday tropes. And that's perfectly fine with me.
This film needs some serious dicking.
So I'm totally fine with this. You know, like, the characters aren't all that deep and all fair enough, you know, but the narrative is true to what it's doing. They're having fun.
I started drinking at 6 a.m.
That's kind of what I'm hearing this whole time.
And maybe you should have started drinking earlier in the day and you might have enjoyed it more, because this is a fun holiday horror, and holiday horrors that embrace the holiday and the horror in their own ways, you don't get them. So yeah, I'm totally fine with this. I think this is great.
So it's okay. An uncut gem, is it not? So
it is absolutely. Were
wrong. The critics were wrong. Because they were like, this is horseshit. And people were right, who paid with their, you know, voted with their wallets, with their feet, you know, when they went in droves to avoid The Good Dinosaur. And then those who didn't give a shit about Mockingjay Part 2. And those people were saints.
Okay? God bless them.
Bless them.
All right. So let's have it.
Look, that's a 1 out of 5.
Jeez. Really?
Yeah, I know. Hold on. On your behalf.
Get real.
Get real, Jakob.
Thank you.
Absolute ding dong.
Oh my God. We should. Oh my God. Oh God.
Oh God.
We should find a solution. I need to think, like, is there a soundboard that we could use that's not in Zencaster, but so that we can both have a soundboard and have like a soundboard off. Like, if Jack comes along, he'll be just like, what is going on in here? All these people just communicate with sound bites.
What's this one?
What the hell? Oh my God, no way, yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the pain zone.
Didn't know what I was getting into. Wow, that's low. My goodness, man.
So anyway, that's a 1 out of 5. I really didn't like this film. I can appreciate some bits of it, but as a whole, it was just such a, like, it was difficult to watch. It was almost like I'm not having fun. I just feel like I was just like trapped in a, like, someone took, like, I'm not big on imagine if you're not big on circus, right? And someone takes you out to a circus, you're just sitting there like, stupid fucking clowns. Just sitting there, arms crossed. I'm just saying, like, because after 15 minutes, I kind of saw through this horseshit, and I'm just like, look, I'm not finding this entertaining. I feel all they're doing is checking off references that I also hold dear, near and dear to my heart, and they're not doing anything interesting with them. They're just like making me aware of the fact that they also like them, and I think, you know, like I deserved more. And it's just like Krampus as a character or as an idea probably is kind of flawed as well, because just like, look, what is this? And then let's just assume this is a Christmas fairy tale. Like, what is it trying to tell me? Is it trying to tell me that this kid should really appreciate its family, even though it's full of real toxic people? Because one day you might lose them, and then all of a sudden, like, good, you know, let Uncle, you know, what's his face? What's David Koechner's name? Howard. Howard. Right. Uncle Howard. Let him bite the dust. Like, let him get dismembered by a teddy bear, you know? But no. Like, you know.
But they sort of learn the lesson, because they all look at one another knowingly, sort of mysteriously, as if they had memories of the event too, that of Krampus's visit.
Didn't work one bit. I don't know why. I can't
really tell you. It's
just sorry. I just sit there, just like, this is dog shit. Like, I'm not having fun with any of this. Like, this is like, and maybe this is just Adam Scott looks like he's like the male version of Rene Zellweger. He just looks like he just smelled a fart. Did you not notice? Like, he looks like he's just like someone just spilled like a bucket of vomit right under his feet, and he just stands there just trying to pretend that this hasn't happened. Just
I feel that I may not be an Adam Scott fan if I pay more attention to his work or I see more of his stuff, but for here I will not comment further.
I mean, maybe I can appreciate it as like a stealth prequel to Hereditary, because Toni Collette then just becomes like obsessed with Paimon or something like this, and that's really Krampus or something. I don't know. I don't like it one bit. I'm sorry. It's not an uncut gem. It was a waste of time and money from where I'm sitting. And I'm really looking forward to when you're showing this to your kids. Let's watch Krampus for Christmas, because Daddy really loved Krampus, and everyone's going like, wow, we're with Jakob on this.
Well, my wife won't watch it with me, but if she did, she'd be on your side faux show. Good. For what a sure. Look,
see, what an absolute legend.
Well, let's not get too carried away.
She must be a lovely person, you know?
She's amazing.
You're not allowed to say anything because it's on record.
I think I said everything right.
Yes, I think you did, you know? So yeah, I didn't like it one bit. 1 out of 5. Not an uncut gem. I appreciate it. You loved it. Good for you. Okay? I really need this of the Christian Bale. Good for you. Would have been so appropriate today. Anyway, so let's go through our tops. How about that? Like, I'm pretty sure you're gonna find like top 7, right?
I kept my list fairly short. Not for absence of stuff. How does it get 4 stars
then? Because normally when something has 4 stars, there's like a top 9 in here.
I know I'm trying to behave. Okay. I like the animated story explaining Krampus's backstory. I think that's fun. It's a nice little style piece. I like that it's sort of a throwback to The Howling. Love it. I like the business with the gingerbread man. I like the whole spiel with wrapping up the kid and taking him away. That made me think of Roald Dahl and Willy Wonka and stuff. I thought that was great.
I need to shave off half a star then.
I think that's full Dante type of reference and fun. Loved it. And the best though, like, it was just aside from all the hijinks and fun along the way that I had, the best is Krampus's first appearance on the roof with the daughter. She's walking alone on the street. I think that's just fantastic. Bit of suspense right there.
Right.
She hides under the truck. It's great stuff. Okay.
This is Jack in the Box is still a little bit of a wet noodle, but you know, I'm gonna let it slide.
Okay. Now, could you find anything?
I've got a few actually.
To justify your star.
A few lines I actually enjoyed. It's like, we should have spent Christmas with my brother. I don't want to spend Christmas on a pig farm. Jesus was born in a barn. So, you know, it's okay. I like that. I like when like Granny says something in German, and I think, you know, the auntie kind of just goes like, she's saying we're fucked. It's like, I'm old enough to recognize when life's coming at you with its pants down.
Yes.
It's just, wow, what an image. A life coming at you with its pants down. Like, this is something else. Like, the best moment is kind of like this of when they go into the attic and all the toys, which, by the way, makes no sense because these toys get delivered somehow and all, and they have these demonically possessed sort of dolls. But these sort of how these toys are designed, I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Again, inconsequential because like they bow down to Universal and say like, look, we need to make it PG-13. I don't know. John Carpenter would have probably said like, oh, I'm going to totally make it PG-13 and just like make it X and then just negotiate down to R.
So, where was I? Joe Dante was saying, I watched the documentary Skin about the history of nudity in film, and Joe Dante shows up in there, and he said, while he was working with Corman, what they would often do is they would send to their cuts to the ratings board, and the ratings board at the time would tell them exactly what to cut, what they had to excise from the film, and then they would take it back and then not make the changes and release it anyway. Because they never came back from the ratings board to double check. They just said, okay, we'll go make the changes.
And no one reminded because that was a comment from, so no one ever saw them.
Right.
So, but that's kind of what Carpenter did, I think, because they gave, I think, Assault on Precinct 13 an X rating. They had objections because there is a kid getting gunned down in there. And they said, like, if you remove this, it's going to be an R. So he said he removed it. He didn't. And he released it as it was.
And that, too, was probably at a time before the X became something else. Because then porns came along and just they embraced the X. So because the porn industry loved the X so much, then actual X films and, you know, studio said, well, we have to sort of change the X thing.
Is this when NC-17 kind of came along?
Well, NC-17, I think, is a creature of 1990. I think X was still a rating, but there was no chance that a film wanted to have the X rating unless you were, in fact, going for, you know,
unsimulated the porn sex scenes.
Right. So you'd do whatever you could to get rid of the X.
Yeah, attracting all the Travis Bickles in the house. Right. Anyway, so these were my tops. Now, bottoms.
What are bottoms. Okay. I had a bunch of small little ones, so I'll leave those be since you'll have plenty.
I've got only three because, you know, okay. I'm trying to be, a civilized sort of, I'm not going to make this movie into an example.
Okay, well, I'll stick with my three just the same. Okay, the snow on the ground here is some of the worst fake studio snow I've ever seen. It looks like, I don't know, powdered potato or something. It's just really, really terrible. The parents falling out of love subplot, didn't need that. That was just sort of a distraction. And the aunt, the one who said, could see life coming at you with their pants down. Her in general, I didn't like that character. Didn't need her. I thought we got the comic belligerence in enough of a dosage from Koechner. So I didn't really feel we needed her for anything. Like
this cantankerous lady.
Yeah. So those were mine.
Okay. Well, I have, it's a small one actually. Toni Collette's misaligned wall pictures. in the beginning, she like hangs these pictures and they're all misaligned and really bothered me. I've got the ending as a big concept, as in like not cathartic, not exhilarating, not suspenseful, like nothing. It's just such a meh ending. And it's like, and by the way, it's all a dream, but was it?
It's like a Christmas Carol. Come on.
Yeah, I know. But then again, we've seen Christmas Carol and it was fine then. And, you know, not fine now.
Oh, what's wrong with convention?
And then another one I have is these sort of the dark elves, these people in costume just caressing these kids in the car. Because like, oh, we're going to get you. We're going to get you. Oh.
And then they do.
And
they pull them under the snow and they turn into, you know, Bugs Bunny trails through the ground.
Yeah. Stupid. Stupid.
Grinch. What a Grinch. What Jesus. A Grinch.
I know.
One right? star.
It is one star. Let me just double check where you can watch this piece of shit film.
just drop a coal.
Oh. I'm pretty sure, like, I'm not gonna unshower. Oh, that's no, okay. My what's his face? My just watches in German for some reason because I was looking for the plumber in different countries. So you can watch this if you so choose. Look, if you live in the US, let me just double check. Oh. Peacock, it's in Peacock kind of TNT, TBS. The fuck? Where is it in Canada?
It's on Crave, I believe.
It's Crave, and it's on, so I suppose because it's on Crave, so it's on Sky and Now TV as well on in the UK. So it's on in a bunch of places where you, if you're subscribed, you can probably watch it. And if not, you can always rent it or buy it from the usuals, or acquire this on physical media. If you really just think you have enough space in your house. I don't know. So, yeah.
It's worth you can, it.
Yeah. Well, so you say. I mean, it's a 50-50 on that. So, you know, like, you just, like, it's your own funeral. Anyway, so you can watch it if you really desire. There are ways to do that. And with that, I think we've concluded this conversation. So, how about we just go through our socials and GTFO. So, Randy, tell me where I can find you.
Sure thing. You can find me on X at Randy Burrows. You can find me on Letterboxd at Bratch7. You can find me on my Facebook group, Island Film Geeks.
Cool. And boom. You can find me, Yaku Flash, Letterboxd, flashandfilm.com. Occasionally checking my messages on Twitter, which is at Talk About Film on Twitter. And also remember to follow us everywhere at Uncut Gems Pod. UncutGemsPodcast.com is where you can go and browse all our episodes. And also patreon.com/UncutGemsPod is where you can get access to extra podcasts for just $3 a month or $4.50 Canadian or £3 or €3. You know the gist. So remember to check in next week, because next week we will be, this will be probably the Christmas episode, actually. So next week we will be talking about Anna and the Apocalypse. And then, you know, with that, you know, might as well have yourself a merry little Christmas, like a week and a bit ahead of schedule. But, you know, like, you do what you need to do. Just make sure to come back next week, because there's going to be more Christmas horror talk. So, yeah, have yourself a nice evening. Bye-bye.